Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program, Today's Issues, on this Monday, November the 13th, 2023. Name of the program is Today's Issues, and I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Good morning, Tim.
We thank everybody for listening. If they want to join us on what you affectionately call that there internet, Ed, what do they need to do?
Well, you have three options. You can go to either Facebook or YouTube and search for Today's Issues. I think on YouTube it's Today's Issues Live. Or you can go to our own streaming service, streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. On any of those three options, you can watch the live video stream of this program.
All right. Well, hope everybody had a nice weekend. Fred, what'd you get accomplished?
What did I get accomplished this weekend? Well, we did a little bit of shopping.
Yeah.
Enjoyed that.
Yeah. Christmas shopping?
We're trying to get that out of the way early.
And, you know, it's not really early for Christmas shopping, according to a growing number of people who've already got their trees up and all kinds of
things. My wife, Allison, and I, we've already got all our shopping done for all our grandkids and everything's ready to go.
Good for you guys.
You and Allison? You and Allison have already got the Christmas shopping done.
Is it my look? What's giving me away?
All right. I had
little or nothing to do with either of that.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I was part of the support system.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
You cheered her on. You got home from work and she's got the shopping done. You said, "Atta girl."
All right. So you got all your shopping done?
A bit of mixture, you know, buying from the brick and mortar stores.
Right.
But Amazon, you know, it's just there. And it is so convenient.
Like a drug.
And I tell you what, the FedEx and the UPS trucks and the mail trucks, they're speeding up and down our street. I'm amazed at the change in the economy just in the last, I guess, 5-10 years or so, but delivering boxes all the time. And I know that hurts a lot of local businesses.
Yeah.
It's tough. But it's just so convenient. Of course, other big stores you can order online too.
Right.
But Amazon is, I guess, the grandpa of it all.
Yeah, we do a mix too, like y'all. We buy some online, buy some from the stores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you know Bed Bath & Beyond's going out of business?
I had heard that, I think, sometime.
At least I know they're closing a bunch of stores.
Well, that breaks my heart. I'm just going to tell you. I use a lot of.
Is that breaking
a lot
news
of product.
From no, beyond for,
your lotion?
I use a lot of, listen, tongue in cheek, I still buy Irish Spring bars of soap the way God intended.
Wow.
You know, these people with their body wash and they're this and they're that. I use shampoo and bars of soap.
It's like God intended.
Like God intended. It was good enough for the apostles when they traveled.
Irish Spring.
Use a good bar of Irish Spring.
Look that up. I think I know the store closed here locally where we live.
No, I think you're right. I think
Bed Bath and Beyond. Yeah. So I don't know, bad management or if they, just were getting hurt by the online sales. But you would think they would be themselves about barn.
There's all kinds of online places where the ladies can shop, believe me, I know, and get their, you know, their beauty, healthy beauty products.
Be careful right there, Ed.
Yes. Health and beauty
you're
products.
Walking on the ledge.
Dancing. I've danced on the ledge.
Fred and I aren't with you.
Yeah. But, you know, speaking of the brick and mortar stores, Dollar General. Sometimes I like to take back roads when I go for a drive, and it amazes me.
Yeah.
Brand new Dollar General stores in the middle of the woods somewhere. And they have big signs out front, grand opening. You know?
I just walked down the hall. They put one up by our popcorn machine. that went down there by our popcorn machine right here in the studio. Just went up the last over the weekend.
Yeah,
a Dollar General. No, you're right.
They are breaking the mold. They are opening stores like crazy, brick and mortar stores. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Well, the wise business decision that they've made, I think, is if you have to have something on the way home,
yeah,
you stop at Dollar General. You can't wait even till tomorrow,
right,
for Amazon to deliver.
Yeah,
you've got to have.
You don't want to go fight the big box store.
Exactly.
Parking, yeah, and everything like that.
Very, yeah, smart business model.
Yeah. And they are everywhere.
Yeah.
That's why I joke around with our Trivia Friday callers. What Tim typically asks when they find out they're from Tennessee, the town in Tennessee, Jackson, Tennessee. Where do you live in Tennessee? I live in Jackson, Tennessee. And I frequently, not every Friday, but I'll frequently say, you mean down by that Dollar General? Everybody says, yeah, there's a Dollar General nearby.
There is, Beth.
It's incredible. General.
All right, Fred, what's story number one?
Well, big shocking story, I guess, in the political world is that South Carolina Senator Tim Scott abruptly ended his campaign. He pulled out of the Republican presidential candidate race last night, and he chose kind of a Sunday night in America with Trey Gowdy on Fox News. He chose that as the venue to make the big announcement. Cut number one.
One of the things I would recommend to every single American, I know it's not possible, by the way, if you ever want to love your country more, run for president. Traveling this country, meeting people has been one of the most fantastic experiences of my entire life. I love America more today than I did on May 22nd. But when I go back to Iowa, it will not be as a presidential candidate. I am suspending my campaign. I think the voters who are the most remarkable people on the planet have been really clear that they're telling me, not now, Tim. I don't think they're saying, Trey, no, but I do think they're saying, not now. And so I'm going to respect the voters, and I'm going to hold on and keep working really hard and look forward to another opportunity.
That's Senator Tim Scott making the announcement. He's pulling out of the campaign.
Well, now, he never did really. I like him a lot. He's been on this program before.
Mm-hmm.
He, strong Christian conservative guy.
Yes.
But he never, what was he polling? Probably 3%?
Yeah, never got out of the tiny single digits.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
He also declined to endorse another candidate at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Just said the best way for me to be helpful is to not weigh in. So I'm like you. I really like him. He's passionate about Jesus. He basically testified in the first debates that he's been in at times, talking about how God and Jesus have changed his life. He's got a lot of good ideas, but not everybody who has good ideas should run for president. And he just never gained the traction that he needed to stay in the race.
Yeah. Like you say, he hasn't endorsed any of the other candidates, but I would think he and Nikki Haley, both from South Carolina, I would think that his supporters probably might gravitate towards Nikki Haley. That's just a guess.
Well, I guess we'll find out if her support gets a bump from this.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true, but remember, it's only about 2 or 3%.
Well,
maybe 4 or 5. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
He did raise a lot of money, though. His campaign did raise a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. So that's my understanding is that's why these candidates suspend their campaign. They don't end it because there are legal issues in terms of what you can do with that money if you end your campaign. If you suspend it, first of all, you can jump back in.
Yes.
If you want. Mm-hmm. There may be something that he needs to do with that money that he can do if it's suspended rather than over.
Yeah. And did you see, speaking of one of the candidates, Chris Christie went to Israel.
That's right. He's Israel, and stories this morning, he is wanting to go back, see for himself. He's toured one of the kibbutz where the Hamas terrorists went in and just ransacked and massacred many people. He said he just wanted to see it for himself, just how bad it is.
Yeah.
he's another candidate that I like. I think he'd make a great attorney general. He's tough, tough on crime.
Yeah. Chris Christie.
Yeah.
That's his, you know, he was a U.S. attorney.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Before he ran for governor of New Jersey. You got to remember, he's not as conservative as the other candidates. But it depends on what issue you're talking about. But you remember, he won the governorship as a Republican in a liberal state.
New Jersey.
So he's, you know, he's that's the reason he's probably not as conservative on a lot of issues as maybe Republicans from a red state, for example. Now, President Trump had his thoughts on Chris Christie, which he shared over the weekend, and we're going to hear those now.
The latest morning consult poll has us far ahead. We're at 59%, and the others are at like 12. One is at 12. I think that's the sanctimonious, but he's rapidly being caught by Ramaswamy, who's good. No, Christie's eating right now. He can't be bothered. Sir, please do not call him a fat pig. That's very disrespectful. Don't call him. See, I'm trying to be nice. Don't call him a fat pig. You can't do that. So now, because you're not allowed to do that, and therefore we're not going to do it, okay? We want to be very civil, right?
Keep going. Oh, that's all I got. Anyway, he went on to say he couldn't call him a fat pig, talking about Chris Christie. Is that helpful, Ed? You're laughing. Is it okay to laugh at fat people?
No, it's not. I got an extra 20 I need to shed. Some might say more than that. I'm not saying it, but some might say that. I've expressed my opinion about that. I don't think it's helpful when the former president insults the men who are his opponents. I don't like Ron the Sanctimonious, the fat pig thing.
Bird brain.
But it really bothers me, politically speaking, when he called Nikki Haley bird brain. And here's why. She's a tough lady. I'm sure she would say, don't worry. I can take care of myself. I think it is more harmful to President Trump's chances if you start insulting women than men. With men, people go, I don't...
Fatty?
It's
people laugh at fatty?
People, you know, I think most people go, that's boys being boys. I don't think it's helpful. It's
five-year-olds being five-year-olds. Yeah.
But you start insulting women, you're going to lose women voters and independents. And maybe it's not a feminist take on things where they say she's a tough woman, she can take care of herself. But intuitively, people know it's not right for a man to insult a woman. That's the way I was raised.
Ramaswamy got in trouble the other night at that debate in calling down Nikki Haley. What'd she say? She's Dick Cheney in 5-inch heels?
Yeah.
Something of that nature. Mm-hmm. You know, and the crowd did not like that.
No.
But they love it when Trump does it.
Well, the Trump supporters, most do, I think. Yeah. But I did notice that during the debate when Ramaswamy that was rude. I thought it was rude when he insulted NBC. Okay.
Yeah.
Now some of our listeners are saying, you're soft on the, you know, the lamestream media. No, they're corrupt. Okay, that's one of the things that Ramaswamy said. But when you're in someone's living room and someone is hosting you, you should say it in a different way. And the crowd clearly didn't like him insulting NBC, and especially.
Yeah, but I think the whole political world's changed now.
Yeah.
After Trump, you can just because people laugh at fat jokes. We used to be told you don't make fun of people's physical appearance. Doesn't matter, male, female, whatever. That's it. That's beneath the office of the presidency or any office for that matter. In fact, your mama told you don't do that.
Yes, my mom told me you shouldn't make fun of people who are fat. They can't help it. Well, as I got older, I found out, no, you kind of can. Not everybody. Some people. That was what my mom told me. Now that our country has gotten larger, I think people.
That was a good pun.
Listen. Well, that wasn't a pun. I was saying not in numbers. Here, I have seen people in comment sections when people are talking about airlines.
Right.
I've seen people get really nasty towards larger people and say they need to buy two seats and all that. So the country has certainly is certainly coarser. We regularly hammer each other and insult each other in public spaces, you know, like comment sections and radio call-in shows. But
yeah. All right. Go ahead, bird brain, Fred. If you're a male, Ed says go for it.
Well,
insults work.
I don't think it's politically wise to continue for the former president to continue insulting his opponents, but people don't think as harshly about it when it's guys insulting guys as they do when it's a guy insulting a woman. That's all I'm saying.
It's a double standard.
It is. It is a double standard, and one I'm glad for. We should treat women with more respect.
But not men.
Well, that it's an interesting time then to bring up about Joe Biden.
Yep.
His mental faculties certainly have been questioned in recent days. And when he stumbles up the stairs of Air Force One or stumbles on a stage, you know, it's being noticed. And it is playing into the chemistry right now surrounding Joe Biden, both outside of his party and inside of his party. Should we really have, Democrats are saying, him at the top of the ticket? There's some polls, 70% of Democrats say they want somebody else at the top of their ticket
right.
mm-hmm. next year. And David Axelrod, who was big in the Obama administration, he's been out there talking about Joe Biden and kind of questioning in public whether it is wise for Joe Biden to run again. Cut number five.
But one number in the polling that was concerning, and in the CNN poll that followed after the New York Times poll, had to do with age. And that's one thing you can't reverse. Yeah. And no matter how effective Joe Biden is behind the scenes, in front of the camera, what he's projecting is causing people concerns, yeah. and that's worrisome. And I think with Donald Trump on the other end, he can still win this election.
Here's my take. David Axelrod probably has daily phone calls with the former president, Barack Obama.
Yeah.
A lot of people are basically saying Barack Obama does not want Joe Biden on the top of the ticket, because Barack Obama doesn't think Biden can win against Donald Trump. And I think he's using David Axelrod as a vehicle to say what Obama doesn't want to say in public himself.
Run it up the flagpole and see who salutes kind of thing.
So there's an article on Fox, and we're not going to quote it, but apparently Biden is noticing this criticism coming through David Axelrod, and I bet you he is suspicious of his former boss, Barack Obama. I think Biden is getting increasing pressure from inside his own party, from some of the people like Barack Obama who don't want him to run, and he's getting a little upset about
wasn't
that.
Wasn't the scuttlebutt when before 2020? As I recall, when Biden was thinking about running,
mm-hmm.
I remember reading something, so this would be 2019, somebody said in private that President Barack Obama said to his vice president, "You don't have to do this, Joe."
Mm.
Tried to discourage him from running for president.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to recall that. That's 5 years ago or so, yeah. 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But if that was true then on the part of President Obama, that's certainly true now.
Yeah.
That he does not think that President Biden should be the standard bearer and probably thinks he can't win.
Well, Biden is also in trouble within his own constituency when we have these huge protests, I call them pro-Hamas
right.
protests. They call themselves pro-Palestinian. Those people, and there's an article out there today, they are the constituency of the Democrat Party. They are the Green people. They are the Black Lives Matter people. These are people that the Democrats depend on to go out and vote. And they're now saying, for instance, up in Rashida Tlaib in Michigan, you've got 300,000 Arabs that in her constituency, they say unless Biden backs off his support for Israel, they will not vote for him in 24.
Well, Alan Dershowitz, the Harvard professor and former attorney,
who is liberal,
who's very liberal, he called out Obama. I think this was just last week, because President Obama in a speech said that Israel needs to end its occupation.
Use the word.
And Dershowitz said, I think he always had a deep hatred in his heart. He hid it very well.
Yep.
That's what Dershowitz said about Obama. So you wonder how much President Obama supports the Hamas version of things. I know all the quote-unquote conspiracy theories, but you know, he was not friendly towards Israel, made Benjamin Netanyahu wait when he came to the White House. I mean, so Alan Dershowitz has apparently discovered and is now certain,
yes,
that what he suspected about Obama and his feelings towards Israel have now come to pass. So you have a split.
Yeah.
Dershowitz, liberal, Jewish, Democrat.
Yes.
Always been supportive of the Democratic Party. Now he looks at probably the most famous Democrat, some say behind the scenes, running things still in the Democratic Party, is now his political enemy on that issue.
So Republicans cannot lose then by supporting Israel. They cannot lose because those, you know, the Rashida Tlaib supporters were never going to vote Republican.
Right.
They'll stay home.
Yes.
That's what will happen with them. And that has the Democrats really concerned.
Right.
Because this is going to go one way or the other, what's happening in Israel and Gaza right now. That, you know, Israel's going to stick to it, which I think Netanyahu has made a plain. Hamas has to be out of there forever.
Right.
And likely you're going to have Israel administering parts of Gaza before this is over, which the White House says it does not want. It's talking two-state solution. And as Israel supporters have said, there was a two-state solution on October 6th.
Yeah.
But that got blown out of the water the next day.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what happens. The longer we go with Biden not saying he's not going to run, then, you know, the harder it will be for the Democrats to come up with a plausible, viable candidate to run in his stead. It's not going to be Kamala Harris, vice president. She's worse than, she polls worse than Biden does. That'd be an interesting conversation, wouldn't it? Between Harris and Biden. You poll worse. No, you poll worse.
Yeah.
Where am I?
You can't do that cackle.
Yeah, please don't laugh like her.
I can't do it. Nobody. Yeah, but anyway, it's we'll see what happens there, but he is, you know, when you're talking to somebody like in his condition, oftentimes they're obstinate. They get in a very defensive posture. They don't want to hear anything negative in their view. So they're not open to reason.
Right.
You know, and especially if his wife, Jill Biden, says, "Go for it, honey." What? I said, go for it. You know what I'm saying? If she says that because she wants to be first lady again.
Yeah.
For as long as she can. That's her interest, not really the whether the country has a person who can handle.
Throw for it.
All right. So we will be back momentarily with more of today's issues on AFR. Stay with us.
Did you know that every day, Preborn's network of clinics experiences 200 miracles? How? Preborn gives women with unplanned pregnancies a window into their womb through free ultrasounds, introducing them to the beautiful life growing inside. Once she meets her child inside her womb and hears their heartbeat, the chance of her baby's life doubles. Because of the generosity of you and me, who donate just $28 to sponsor an ultrasound, Preborn can do this. The cost of a dinner to save a life, the most worthwhile investment you can make. All gifts are tax deductible and go entirely to saving babies. Someday you may meet a baby that you rescued and you can give them a hug. Or maybe they'll give you a hug. Maybe they'll even save your life as they grow and pursue meaningful careers. One thing is for sure, you will never regret saving a child's life because life is a miracle. Please donate your best gift today. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. If you're like most of us, you're paying way too much for healthcare. That's why I want to tell you about a ministry that has been meeting the healthcare needs of hundreds and thousands of Christians, and that's Christian Healthcare Ministries, chministries.org. Christian Healthcare Ministries is cost-sharing made easy. For over 40 years, this unique model has allowed believers to choose their own doctors without worrying about networks or waiting periods, since they are not insurance, but a faith-based alternative to insurance. Members not only get advantages from the affordability, flexibility, and reliability of CHM, but they also receive access to 24/7 telehealth services at no additional cost. It's no surprise that doctors across the country appreciate working with CHM, and so will you. It all starts with a visit to chministries.org/AFR. That's chministries.org/AFR. Christian Healthcare Ministries is the longest-serving health share ministry serving all 50 states. Share the good news with a friend, too. chministries.com/AFR. Make the switch today with anytime enrollment.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim with Ed and Fred, and we hope you had a nice weekend. And we appreciate you listening to American Family Radio. What's your next story, Fred?
Well, we've all seen the big, I call them pro-Hamas demonstrations in various parts of the world, including major cities here in the United States and, unfortunately, university campuses. But tomorrow in New York, there is a big pro-Israel rally that has been planned. This after Paris this weekend, 180,000 people out, pro-Israel people out. So we're seeing a swing in the pendulum there. And so I think that's rather positive, but it goes to what we were talking about, the split in the Democratic Party right now between supporting Israel and supporting the Palestinians. And there is some pressure on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to come up with some kind of solution to the hostages that are being held, which is around 239, I think, at the moment. I saw an interview this morning with some parents who have their son was captured. They're hoping he is still alive. They're going to be part of this march tomorrow. But Netanyahu asked about the possibility in an NBC interview this weekend about the possibility of a hostage deal. This is what he had to say. Cut three.
Let's talk about the hostages. There are reports that there is a possible deal that would involve getting out women and children and the elderly. How close are you to reaching a deal to get more of the hostages out?
Well, Kirsten, I can say that we weren't close at all until we started the ground operation. In fact, we heard that there's an impending deal of this kind or of that kind, and then we learned that it was all hokum. It was nothing. But the minute we started the ground operation, things began to change.
So is there a potential deal, Mr. Prime Minister? Is there a potential deal?
There could be, but I think the less I say about it, the more I'll increase the chances that it materializes. And it's a result of pressure, military pressure.
So what Netanyahu is saying is that the potential for a hostage deal depends on how much pressure that we put on Hamas. I think the flip side of that, what Netanyahu is saying, I'm not going to be pressured to pull back. Right. From what we are doing in order to get hostages freed. That's my assessment of what
he can't. He can't do that because that will encourage hostage taking simultaneously with Hamas attacking Israel. Should Israel stop what it's doing and pull back and allow Hamas to regroup, Hamas will know we can save ourselves the next time we attack by making sure we have hostages. So I now that would be terrifying if I had a family member who was a hostage. But I think for the sake of his country, Benjamin Netanyahu is doing the right thing. You don't, you can't make a deal. You can tell Hamas, you can accomplish X, Y, or Z if you release the hostages, but we're cleaning out Hamas from Gaza and Gaza City.
I just get the sense that Benjamin Netanyahu and the people of Israel are going to do what they're going to do to protect their country with this ground operation, and they're not going to be worried about so much about what the world says, because the world is going to condemn them anyway. They did even before, though. I mean, the anti-Semitism's been out there. You see I don't even know. They need the support of the U.S. They do. And they do have, I think, overwhelmingly strong support throughout the United States, generally speaking. Despite these pro-Hamas rallies that you see going on, they would call them pro-Palestinian rallies, but they're really rallies where they believe from the river to the sea, drive the Jews out. They don't. So it's you can split hairs by saying they're pro-Palestinian but not pro-Hamas, but they're synonymous, Hamas and the Palestinian cause in Gaza.
Yes.
In Gaza. So we'll see what happens there, but it seems to me Israel's taking the approach, listen, we got to do what we got to do, or else we're not even going to be here.
Yeah,
we can't live with Hamas firing rockets at us at will. And we got the Iron Dome, which takes down 95% or 98% of the rockets, but still, we can't live like this. And with the idea that they may come over and try to butcher our citizens again.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that the anti-Semitism that we have seen worldwide, including on many U.S. college and university campuses, has probably strengthened the resolve of the Israeli people. For what you're saying, they look around and they say, this anti-Semitism is not a fluke. We have got to take care of ourselves and not rely on any of these countries where a large percentage of their people hate our guts. So we've got to do what we've got to do. I think that strengthens their resolve to get this job done.
And if we get criticized, we get criticized, but we got to, it's a death match.
Yeah.
It's us or them. That's the approach that they're having to take. So every move Israel makes now, you know, they've been calling for a ceasefire before it even started, before the ground operation even started. The left and the Muslim world, and well, almost the whole world, been calling for a ceasefire before Israel even had a chance to respond. So they don't want Israel to defend themselves. These people don't want Israel to clean out Gaza because they hate Jews just because. And doesn't matter. You can tell them that, well, they slaughtered the Jews in Israel, and Israel's responding. They're defending themselves. They're going to hunt these people down who did this. And people are going to, those people who defend Gaza and the Palestinians over there are going to say, I don't care. They don't have a right to do anything because innocent people are dying in Gaza.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know if they would say innocent people because they believe Hamas is innocent.
Yeah, they're just like the President of Turkey, Erdogan said they're freedom fighters.
Right. So next story, Fred.
Well, somewhat related, you know, Israel lives with this terror threat, has lived with this terror threat for a long time. Last week, FBI Director Christopher Wray, without saying our border is a big problem, he did admit that the terrorist threat has grown in this country in recent years. No question about it. Congressman Mike Turner, he's a Republican from Ohio, is commenting on that. Cut number six.
He cited the southern border, indicating that there are people in the United States who've crossed the southern border who pose a risk to our country, people who are allied with international terrorist groups and organizations who both as groups could be planning terrorist attacks.
Yeah, it could be planning terrorist attacks. This threat is growing. We know. We get the numbers from the Border Patrol people over 200, I think, on the terrorist watch list. And then they know there are a bunch of what they call gotaways,
right,
that are now living in our country. And why should we be surprised? I mean, we know there are people coming in from Yemen. We know there are people coming in from Iran. We know there are people coming in from Syria. We've got numbers that they're aware of coming from those, what I would call terrorist sympathetic countries that are coming into our country now.
And many young men from China. It's not the same issue as the potential for terrorist cells already present, but also setting up since the Hamas attack on Israel.
Nobody wishes a terrorist attack on our turf here, but I think we can say the potential for it, as Christopher Wray, FBI director, as Christopher Wray is saying, the potential for it has grown since Joe Biden became president.
Because of that open border. This is when we look to the rank and file members of the FBI. We talk about those at the top. We feel like have weaponized the agency itself, talking about Mark Houck, for example, the pro-life protester who is now suing the Biden administration and the FBI. But the rank-and-file FBI members that we always talk about, who probably do not, most of them do not like the weaponization for political purposes of the FBI, this is when we hope that they are doing their job in keeping America safe and tracking down the potential for these terrorist cells, if they exist. Christopher Wray seems to indicate that that's likely. I think that's what he's saying.
Absolutely. Well, we also, speaking of the border, we know that millions have crossed the border since Joe Biden became president and basically advocated for an open border policy. And they've come, they said, seeking asylum because they think, you know, America is where my dreams will be realized. Well, some of them who have moved north to places like Chicago and New York, some of them are having their first experience with winter weather. I don't know if you've seen the videos. People living in tents, some of these folks are living in tents on sidewalks outside police stations in Chicago. Snowing, all right?
Right.
So in New York on the weekend, because they've had well over 100,000, I think, of folks coming up from the border who have arrived in New York, sanctuary city, come one, come all.
Yeah.
Well, they're running out of space for them in their hotels and everything. So on the weekend, they set up tents, city of New York set up tents on an abandoned runway in Brooklyn. And they were going to move a bunch of folks from Venezuela to there. And some of these Venezuelans now are going public saying, we want to go home. It isn't working out for us, especially this winter stuff and living in tents. We really don't want this.
Well, and they have said there's nothing here for us. There's nothing for them to do. I'm assuming that some of these individuals who have come up from Latin America are looking, for opportunity to work and make a living. And if there are no jobs available, plus some of the funds are running out in terms of welfare, and they are recognizing just how cold it can get north of the Rio Grande, especially when you make it up to Chicago and New York. So I don't blame them for going, this is a bad idea. We're going home.
And the question is, who's going to fly them home? Taxpayers of America?
I don't know.
They're going to have to make the long trek.
I knew this was coming back in August. I said, winter's coming. And, you know, you're going to have these folks who are used to milder, warmer climates, and they don't have any homes, really. But they chose to do it. Yeah. You know, I think these illegal immigrants who are here from by the millions, they thought when Biden said, y'all come, that they were going to be provided work permits and living places to live. Now, these sanctuary cities are giving as many people as possible hotel rooms and such. But now there's such an overflow, they're having to live in tents. And, you know, you sit around in a tent and walk around the street and you can't get a job. And it starts getting cold and your family's there. You're thinking, I just need to go home. You know, even though it was so bad they left for the U.S.,
right.
But if they can't work here, Well, a lot of them are working underground illegally now. That will happen. We've seen that happening in New York. But to be illegal and get work permits and so forth, it's just not happening for them right now. And they're, but anyway, we'll see what happens. But the cold weather, if you're, if you have to, you can't live in that. You can't live on the street in a tent.
No.
In Chicago, you'll die.
Right.
Huh? And so anyway.
And I don't think the American people are going to put up with more. You know, these states like New York and Illinois are asking for billions of dollars more in federal money. Well, the American people just aren't going to put up with that.
Right.
You know, they're just saying, no, no more taxpayers' money for this sort of thing. So, you know, liberalism is something that looks good on paper sometimes.
Right.
But then
until you run out of other people's money.
Yes. But then reality hits. And that's what's happening at these sanctuary cities.
Yeah.
It's,
I think that was a Margaret Thatcher quote.
Yeah.
I think socialism looks good until you run out of other people's money, something like that.
They are cleaning up in San Francisco, by the way, the tent cities on the sidewalks. But the reason for that is that the APEC meeting, which includes the likes of Chinese leader Xi, they're meeting in San Francisco this week. They've been showing some before and afters, like before on the streets, like the basically open sewers and tents. And the city has been going around with big hoses and cleaning up because they want San Francisco to look good for the Chinese. Some people would say, why? But that's what's happening on the streets of San Francisco all of a sudden.
Well,
Streets of San Francisco.
That's a good show name.
Yeah, with who is it? Carl
Malden? Carl Malden?
Yeah.
Streets of San Francisco. Oh, how the streets have changed.
Starsky and Hutch was based out of there, too.
Is that right?
The Starsky and Hutch, they were set in, their setting was San Francisco.
Well, you certainly don't want the communist Chinese using a major U.S. city for propaganda purposes, which is what they would do.
Sure.
They, you know, they'll take video of the president of China's visit. And if you've got homeless people and drug addicts all over the street, you sell that to your people and to others and say, look, this is what capitalism does. So it's ridiculous that they're cleaning it up for President Xi Jinping. Mm-hmm. But
I'll be surprised if that he's not carjacked, though.
Oh, I think that's a good way, actually, to get rid of a good percentage of the carjackers in one day. You try to carjack the Chinese, when they're equivalent of the Secret Service, there'd be dead carjackers, I think.
There is, in all seriousness, I'm reading every day the people in California, in the big cities in particular, mm-hmm. they're open game. I mean, it's open season on citizens. There's nobody protecting them. If they are, you have to have a gun yourself.
Yes.
You have to know how to use it.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the video of the guy coming home from the gym?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Into a gated community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a couple of guys, I think, jumped over the fence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stuck a gun in his back. He had a gun on him with a permit.
Mm-hmm.
And they exchanged fire.
Yeah.
In a gated community.
Yes.
Gunfire.
Mm-hmm.
Not like
that's what I'm saying.
Chicago.
This is happening every day. And they're having trouble keeping cops. Are they losing cops? Talking about Los Angeles, San Francisco, some other places there. People are leaving by the thousands, hundreds of thousands every year, leaving California to go somewhere else, go to another state, go to even Nevada or Arizona or Florida or Texas or somewhere else. Colorado, they're not staying. People are getting out. If they can, if they have the means to get out, they're getting out.
Yes.
Again, I am separating the large liberal cities from the rural California life, which a lot of them, but still the taxation and the regulation on even the people who live in the rural parts of California is taking its toll.
And if you send your kids to a public school anywhere in California,
you're
going to subject your kids to the nuttiness that is California education.
Yeah.
Which, you know, just to go back to what we were talking about, let's say that Joe Biden decides that he's not going to run. And everybody talks about Gavin Newsom, who just got back from China. Gee, he's not interested in running. How do you think the rest of the country would react to having a guy from California with the left-wing policies that he has? What chance would he have nationally to win?
By the way, his polling numbers in California are really bad.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that the other day. So I was thinking to myself, he's probably not the best candidate if Biden fails to put the governor of California up right now, because it's he has nothing good going on that he can cite for his state. What? Listen, I don't know who would be the answer for the Democrats. This is just Tim talking. I'm thinking somebody like Gretchen. What's your last
Whitmer?
Name?
Whitmer.
Whitmer up in Michigan, governor lockdown. She is about the right age to run for president. Okay. I disagree with everything she does from the moment she gets up in the morning. If she orders her eggs.
You don't even like the coffee she drinks.
I don't even like the coffee she drinks. I don't wish any harm on her.
Right.
It's just her politics I totally reject, talking about Whitmer.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to stand back and say, what's a good choice for the Democrats, I think she would be a good choice. Because she's pretty well known. She can win Michigan and probably help win some of the other industrial, I call them Big Ten states. I mean, the Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. So she's viewed favorably by Democrats all over the country. So I think somebody like her would be a much more formidable candidate than Gavin Newsom. In California,
I agree, and the reason that you're citing about Gavin Newsom, if you find a candidate who could replace Joe Biden, a Democratic candidate, you automatically are taking the voters' attention off the Biden economy and all the other things for which voters are going to blame Biden. But if you replace him with someone like Gavin Newsom, now you've got attention on a state that's also ridiculously
right.
suffering. So the option
is... It's a progressive failure
yes.
state is what it
so
is.
So the option is to go with somebody who takes the attention off Biden.
Right.
And then if they have any sort of success story in their state, as a right. governor especially, then you are going to make the election about the Republican candidate, not the Democratic candidate.
Right.
What about right. Joe Manchin?
Now, people may not have known this. Was it Friday he said, I'm dropping out of the Senate race?
He
not,
did.
Not running for reelection.
Now, he was trailing, am I right? He was going to be beat.
Yes.
I think everybody pretty well conceded he was going to be beat in November.
Yes. Yeah, by the former governor who's running against him.
He was a yellow dog Democrat just holding on.
He was.
And he was going to be beat by the Republican candidate in November. I think everybody, so he drops out so he doesn't have to suffer that.
Right.
But is he making waves about potentially running for president himself?
Well,
and on what party ticket would he run?
Well, in his announcement, he said he plans to travel the country because he believes there's a large swath of the nation that's in the middle.
They don't want Trump or Biden, either one.
That's right. And so it when he said that, everybody started talking about what, third party run?
I think that's where the RFK vote might go, though.
The no labels.
Didn't you say RFK is polling at 20%? Is that true?
That's the story I saw on CNN.
Are you sticking to it?
It says there is a Time Siena poll out that shows that RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is polling. This is a Quinnipiac University poll. Kennedy hit 22% among registered voters, which is high. It's not. There have been some other.
That was
fairly,
one. That was one poll. Is that right? I mean, just to be
that's
clear.
That's just one poll. There have been a couple of other polls. Ross Perot in 1992. I think he hit 21%. George Wallace in 1968 hit around 20%. Now, both Perot and Wallace, when people went into the voting booth, their support dropped quite a bit. But so nobody knows where RFK Jr. would play out if he continues to poll well.
But Manchin, where would Manchin?
But Manchin, I don't think Manchin runs as an independent. I think he runs if, in the next couple of months or whatever, Joe Biden drops out. Or maybe he throws his hat into the ring at if there's an open convention. I don't think Manchin would run as an independent.
He got no shot, Ed, on the Democrat side. No shot. No. Zero.
Yeah.
So
he's 180 degrees to Joe Biden.
That's the reason he's dropping out.
On climate change.
But I think maybe this is what he would say in running as an independent. But this idea that he's going to try to find a middle ground, he could conceivably say, I'm sticking to the Democratic Party, and I am going to call independents and the Democrats that are true liberals to support my candidacy, and then you see what you can swing once you get to the convention. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's well known enough around the country to be a prime Democratic Party candidate.
Well, you also have got to, it's getting kind of late in the ball game here to start putting together an apparatus
right.
to run for president.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. As an independent, that's why, you know, I'm sure Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, he's going to run as an independent, but you don't just say, I'm going to run as an independent. You got to get on the ballot.
Right.
On all these states, you got to have the money. It's a lot of work.
You got to have a ground game.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of work to run an independent. Even as wealthy and as, you know, as organized and as well known as Ross Perot was.
Right.
He had a hard time pulling that off. In fact, if I remember correctly, there were 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 states where he wasn't even on the ballot.
Right.
This is when he ran against
H.W.
Was it Clinton
Bush.
And H.W. Bush?
And Bill Clinton in 92.
And then he ran a second time. He didn't get as high a number.
Then he dropped out. Remember?
Larry?
He said they were making threats against his family.
Remember me talking to Larry King, Ross Perot? Larry?
A big sucking sound. Our job's going south.
All right, we'll be back in a minute. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.